Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Metz.
Hello and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. I'm Jeremy Maggs with 30 minutes on South African and global news. We are live and then up as a podcast, interviews with key business and political figures, prominent newsmakers and leading experts, all in a concise and informative update. It's Monday, the 8th of July. Coming up on the program, thousands impacted by severe winter flooding in Cape Town. Can South Africa afford a new nuclear power plant? South Africa's electricity supply improvement and the impact on business. The impact of industrial action on the Gautrain and new thinking on a recovery strategy for our battered auto sector. Now, we're told today that Gautrain workers belonging to the National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa have been staging a protest over wages outside Waterfall City in Midrand, north of Johannesburg. Has this at all had any impact on the service generally? Joining us now from the Gauteng Management Agency, the Chief Executive Officer, Tshepo Kgobe. Welcome. Thank you very much for joining us today. Was this just a single protest or has there been more extensive industrial action?
The industrial action was localized, Jeremy, and thank you for having me. In particular, the picketing rules are very clear. They cannot picket at the stations, and therefore they are localized to the area where they are at the depot itself. There's probably about 50 or 60 people gathered there. Initially, in the early part of the morning, there were just probably about 15 people. But those are the people that are there earlier on. We had a bit of a challenge earlier on when they were banning tires on the road. But public order policing did come through to come and manage the issue. And we are now back to where everything is functioning properly. The maintenance staff are in the depot. All our services have run this morning. All our services are running during the day. And all our services will continue running in the evening.
Are you concerned in any way that maintenance could be impacted, which would obviously have some sort of impact on safety?
Not at all. Remember, Jeremy, our contract has, you know, that a function of separation of duties. The Bombela Maintenance Company is a completely different company from the company that is striking at the current moment. So the current company that is on strike at this point in time is the operating company. So it's a station staff, the drivers, the guards, and everybody else that you need for operations in itself, not the maintenance people.
What do you say to the National Union of Metal Workers, who says the employer is failing to negotiate in good faith and that management has been given bonuses, guaranteed bonuses, and their members only get bonuses based on performance?
No, I've clarified this over and over again, Jeremy. There isn't any negotiation on that stage, and I had to check up with BOC or the Bombela Operating Company CEO what is the issue here, and she was out of the color. She was very clear. The same way, at the level of the head contract, which is the concessionaire, there is performance requirements. At the operating level, there's performance requirements. At maintenance and also at the bus operations, there's performance requirements. How would anybody go into an arrangement with anybody where they guarantee them bonuses when they themselves do not have the ability to pay those bonuses if they don't meet their targets? And that's a very challenging issue to deal with. But as we said to them over and over again, Jeremy, the Bombela Operating Company is willing to negotiate. They are the ones that walked away, and they are the ones that, on the third sitting of this negotiation, declared a, what do they call it, a non-resolution, and therefore a dispute.
On a wider scale, about 3 weeks ago, Gautrain did confirm that it was experiencing disruptions because of, and I quote, failures caused by aging infrastructure. How much of a worry is that going forward?
Look, Jeremy, as I've said on various interviews, that we're in the middle of a renewal. So towards this point of the system where it's like 14 years old, in itself, you go into the renewals, and renewals is the replacement of any old components, the replacement of any challenges that are experienced earlier than when you were expecting them. What we've done is we've gone into a mode where we are actually accelerating those the renewals themselves. And in essence, that will then give us a bit of a setup where we are quick to sort out a lot of these issues.
But going forward then, as you're busy with this maintenance refurbishment, could passengers expect more disruptions?
We are trying to avoid all of that as a whole, Jeremy. To us, we have acquired the system with its maintenance intact, and therefore we should not be having these challenges. Some of these is what we call infant mortality or what we call the juvenile mortality of components, which happens in certain cases where you have components that fail much earlier than what they have. So it's about us adapting and reworking the maintenance plans to be able to adapt to the trends that everyone is seeing. It's modern maintenance practices. It shouldn't actually create a long-term problem.
Tsepo Khobe, thank you very much indeed, Chief Executive Officer at the Gautrain Management Agency.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
We've almost become accustomed to it again. What am I talking about? Well, the constant supply of electricity as the country hits 100 days with no load shedding. More on that, the decision as well to establish a separate energy portfolio and the country's new nuclear ambitions, as I'm joined now by Dr. Josienso Ramakgopa, who is South Africa's electricity minister. And first of all, you are now looking at plans from Treasury to secure funding for approval for a 2,500 megawatt nuclear power plant, obviously to increase efforts in increasing electricity generation. Minister, welcome to you. And what then is driving this thinking?
Well, first is that the 2,500 megawatt of nuclear is part of the integrated resource plan 2019. So it's in keeping with the energy mix. So what we're doing now is to develop a framework for procurement. So that framework will answer, amongst others, the following question. What is the financing instrument that will be ideal for a build program of this magnitude? What is the cost of capital? But what we know, there are things that we know even before we answer the framework, that the ESCOM balance sheet won't be able to carry that. So you need to design a bespoke solution working with private sector to resolve that. You must answer the question, who's going to operate this? So in all likelihood, it's going to be ESCOM, because I think it's got the experience of operating this facility of this nature. And then you must resolve the technology, because technology has evolved over a period of time. So once the team answers all of those questions, those will constitute the framework, and that's what we will announce to the general public.
And Minister, what sort of time frame are you looking at in this respect?
So the initial time frame that was given to me, remember at the time I didn't carry the mandate of procurement, was that they would have done this by March, April. Clearly, we have gone outside what their commitment is. So I've asked them that they need to come back to me on more precise timelines. So once I get those precise timelines and be comfortable myself that those are reasonable, but yet ambitious, then we'll be able to communicate it to the country now that we bear the responsibility of procuring new generation capacity. So as an executive authority, we now own that process.
Whichever way you look at it, it is going to be a very expensive exercise. Do you have any sense of ballpark cost at this time?
Oh, no, I don't have those numbers. So I know that the upfront capital cost compared to any other fuel source is very expensive. But if you have to stretch that over the operating period, I think it becomes competitive. So that's what the modeling is. So once we're confident about that, we will announce. Remember that whatever we do, it's at the pace and scale that the country can afford. I think that's what is important. And what's also important is just the transparency of this process. It must not be mired in secrecy. No, it won't happen at this day for as long as I'm in charge of the program. It will be very public.
again, that almost preempts my next question, is that South Africans would have a right to be concerned about a project of the scale, given the problems that we experienced in the past, cost overruns, corruption with Medupi and Kusile.
Oh, absolutely justified. And that's why I'm saying that it is important that to build credibility in this process, we must be transparent every step of the way. And I will not back down on that. And like I said earlier, that whatever we do will be in the best interest of the country. So we will not enter into a transaction that the costs are prohibitive. Ultimately, has got huge implications on the tariff, disadvantage the South African consumer. But what we know is that the technology has evolved over time, and there's technology that allows for rapid deployment. The costs are a bit more predictable. There's test cases in Europe and China. They've gone that route as examples. So we know that the technology has improved. The planning, the management has also improved. So I'm confident that we should be, when we make a promise, remain within the parameters of that promise. But yes, you're absolutely correct. I think the average person should be concerned, because we have a checkered track record on how we deliver major infrastructure projects, and not just Medupi and Kusile. I think you go to Gautrain, you can mention major infrastructure projects, the cost overrun. So yes, I think it's something that will receive our attention.
Minister, on a wider canvas, the rationale behind the creation of the separate energy portfolio, how is this restructure going to accelerate your approach to dealing with the energy difficulties that we have right now?
Well, obviously, it's an application made by the president. But how I see it is that now we're responsible for, if you like, almost the entire value chain. I think the difficulty before was that procurement was happening somewhere, and all that we do was just to do a determination that whether procurement will happen at the speed at which we see the opportunity or the crisis, it wasn't our call. So now we're able to manage the entire value chain. We're able to engage, for an example, as we're engaging with the financiers, project developers, the regulators, to say what are the lessons that can be learned and unlearned from the previous big windows, and how best can we improve on those streamline issues. So that when we go out on what I refer to as a mega big window, we are confident that we have cleared all the hurdles, and we make it possible for developers and financiers to get to financial close quickly, commercial operating date. It's a function of the speed with which you resolve the regulatory issues, grid access, EIA, water use license. So we must streamline those so that we give confidence to the market. When we say we're going out, we don't have megawatts that are unallocated. Otherwise, the program is discredited. So that's why it is important that when we have the entire complex of energy, then we can address it. You can address the issues of gas as you address the baseload question. Because of the intermittency of renewables, you are able to address the issues of transmission to help to onboard the transmission and develop corridors where you are able to onboard the new generation capacity quicker. So if you like, we have, if you like, the entire ecosystem of the energy space, not just the concerned with the ESCOM and the resolution of load shedding, but it's a function of other parts moving in time. I'm confident that with an expanded mandate, we should be in a position to address this question.
And just finally, Minister, are you confident, is your department confident, that the current load shedding success will remain, that we'll go beyond 100 days?
Oh, no, we are on record, as having said, when ESCOM released the winter outlook, to say if the rate of failure of the units amounts to 14,000 megawatts in total, that's the optimistic case scenario. So we shouldn't have load shedding. But if you add on that scenario, another 1,500 losses, getting to 15,500 of losses, you'll be at stage 2 load shedding. If you add 3,000 to the base load, going to base case, going to 17,000 of total losses, you'll go to stage 5. what has been our experience since we started the winter period is that we are far exceeding our own projection. I mean, if you look at the past, I think, 6 weeks or so, the total losses are averaging about 12,500 megawatts. So 1,500 to the good, better than our own base case scenario. But having said that, no, we're not out of the woods yet. I did say that really you need a new additional capacity. We know there's 2,500 coming from the three units, one unit at MIDP, unit number four, 800 megawatts, Kusile unit number six, 800 megawatts, and Kubet unit number two, 980 megawatts. In total, it's about 2,500 megawatts. That's guaranteed, which will come around October, the latest, the last of those will come around October. And that's why you need to accelerate these bid windows, that mega bid window, address all the challenges there, and make sure that the certainty in the market continue with our program on rollout of solar PV industry and household to reduce demand so that you relieve pressure on the grid. So if you pull all of those together, I'm confident that we are closer to resolving load shedding than we were before the same period last year.
Minister, thank you very much indeed for joining me today.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
All right, let's return now to the electricity debate. And South Africa has generally been welcoming the no load shedding for over 100 days now. And obviously, this is a boon for business confidence. And now, Happy Kambule, who is Business Unity South Africa's head of energy, believes right now is the ideal time to bring in additional generation. He joins me on the program now. And first of all, then, can you elaborate for me more broadly on how business is benefiting from this newfound stability?
Thanks for the question. Yeah, I think there's two fronts on the confidence side of things. Is that first, obviously, with increased productivity, or rather the stability of the grid, allows us to be able to have a greater degree of productivity and certainty in terms of what we're able to produce and what we're able to satisfy customers with. So that's a big win, because then you know that at least there is certainty, a greater degree of certainty around what is possible to do and how many working hours you have and how you can drive business going forward, whether it's on the production side or on the service side. But then on the second aspect of this is that it also gives consumer confidence, because one of the things that had started to occur is that people were more reluctant to spend money and to go into businesses, whether it's for services or for products, because they believed that there wouldn't be any operating hours or people would not be available due to the fact that systems are not working. So with that being addressed and there's a sense that things are actually a little bit more normal, people are more willing to actually spend more money and actually access the services that are available in order to drive the necessary activity in the economy.
On a bigger scale, do you think this might open the pipes as far as more capital expenditure is concerned?
Well, we are seeing a lot of reports that are indicating that there will be a lot more spend, particularly because in the past few years we've seen a lot of indications from particularly companies in the secondary sector looking at investing in the country. But one of the biggest problems has been actually the availability of power. So yes, it would look at the fact that there will be more money spent. I think currently most of the monies are spent on, or rather capital spent on, one, stabilizing their own consumption patterns, and then secondly, actually to maintain the current production levels. And then over time, I think in the midterm, you'll start to see an expansion of some of the sectors that we have currently in the country. But definitely most money will be going into actually securing the current consumption that people may have, whether through blended electricity options, and then secondly, to increase their own consumption by self-production of electricity, and then eventually investing back into the actual processes that give you the kinds of returns that you need, whether it's on your production lines or expanding supply chains or even diversifying some of the product offerings.
Of course, good business practice is about managing risk. Are you worried about any potential risks that could disrupt this newfound stability in the sector?
I think one risk is that we stop adding more electrons onto the system. That's a big risk, because we do have a phenomena of suppressed demand in South Africa for electricity specifically, where most sectors are not demanding electricity at the levels that they could if they were running optimally. So we are still kind of treading waters and just keeping ourselves afloat. So when people are actually on the surfboard now riding it, there will be an increase for electricity, and that could also bring us back into a situation where the system is constrained. But then the other risk, of course, which is far more short-term and quite direct, is the distribution networks. The local distribution networks have not been maintained. Not enough investment has been made in order to have those local distribution networks working and functioning in the right way. And the mere fact that they are susceptible to collapse or to outages also increases that sense of instability and uncertainty, particularly for customers, because most customers don't necessarily know whether or not this is electricity from my local distributor or from Eskom. So it's seen as just electricity. So one of those risks is this lack of investment and maintenance of the local grid.
All right. Given the recent improvements, does Business Unity South Africa now support South Africa's nuclear energy aspirations? You would have seen the electricity minister touting this concept at the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to look at whatever electricity procurement program, whether it's a technology specific or any of the determinations that may come after that, in the context of the electricity, in the context of the integrated resource plan or electricity plan. So if the electricity plan calls for that and it is low cost, it is optimal, and actually it fulfills the necessary criteria for the policy adjustment outcomes, then it makes sense, you know, because the most important thing is to get the cheapest electricity more readily available, as well as a stable system which can keep us competitive, at least in terms of where we are competing. So it really doesn't matter to what extent it is a particular technology, like it's coal or nuclear or gas or renewables. It's really that, is it fit for purpose, and does it reduce the many considerations that we have, whether it's greenhouse gases, whether it's affordability, it actually addresses the affordability issue, and is it going to be reliable? So I don't think it's a question for Business Unity to support a particular technology, because for us it's really the system that is quite important, and that we have that security of supply.
Your point is well taken, but you will concede that we don't have a great track record when it comes to big energy build. I just need to remind you of Medupi and Kusile. So we would need to approach something like this with a degree of caution.
Yes, of course. I mean, any big infrastructure project, we will have to, as a country, even as social partners, actually scrutinize and make sure that it is done in the right way. I think the biggest folly that we have had, and it's also with Medupi and Kusile, as well as the other big infrastructure bills, is that we fight up until, we have oversight of what's going on, and we fight for the right kind of modality to operationalize or to build, but then we don't follow throughout the build process. And I think now we are a little bit much more smarter and much more aware in terms of what role we need to be playing. And definitely, whatever the decision it is, whether it is renewables, whether it is gas, coal, nuclear, whatever technology option that is being touted, and when it is being determined through Section 34, we will have to ensure that we've got our eyes on it as much as we've got our eyes on the other CNI projects.
Happy Kambule, thank you very much indeed. From Business Unity South Africa, Head of Energy, I appreciate your time.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
More than 4,000 people have been left homeless. Around 1,000 homes destroyed after heavy rains caused flooding in the Western Cape at the weekend. The South African Weather Service releasing a level 8 warning for damaging winds, rain and flooding in most parts of the province. Let me update you on that situation. Voter Creel speaks for the Western Cape government. Mr. Creel, welcome to you. Can you give me a quick update on the current situation? Have those numbers moved?
Yes, we've had two very, very cold and stormy days in the Western Cape. This morning we were updated at the Disaster Management Center, the West Coast District, the city and Cape Winelands area were quite hard hit. So there was lots of localized flooding, trees uprooted, and a lot of informal settlements were also struck quite badly. Lots of people lost their shelter, and the city and the province together with the national government are working now to try and get those people to places where they can be safe and dry. The NGO sector is providing food and blankets and mattresses. So everyone is working very hard to make sure that people are safe and dry. Areas, just if I can mention a few numbers, a town like Ceres received 123 millimeters of rain Sunday and Monday, and a place like Gerabou, Elgin, more than 80 millimeters. But there's still more rain coming on, especially Tuesday and Thursday. So we are bracing for a wet and cold week ahead.
What about roads and infrastructure?
At this stage, there's no reports of serious damages to roads and infrastructures. Obviously, some of the mountain passes have been closed because of snow. Yesterday, Halswoegte outside Stellenbosch and Franschhoek Pass were temporarily closed. That's open again now. But some of the mountain passes in the Ceres area have been closed today due to snowfall.
Just in terms of the number of 4,000 that have been left homeless, is that number accurate? And is that one of the is this one of the worst incidents that you've experienced in recent times?
Yes, it was a very destructive wind that blew over the Cape Flats, and this ward in Khayelitsha was very hard struck. The 4,000 people were the initial numbers, and you'll understand that immediately after an event such as that, people tend to see where they can be accommodated by family and friends as a first instance, and then churches, NGOs, school halls, town halls kick in and become available. So the number has gone down, but the problem is still huge, and it's receiving our attention.
What additional precautions then should residents be taking in coming days, saying, given that you're expecting the worst tomorrow and again on Thursday?
Don't go sightseeing for snow, or reconsider if you were planning to do that, because you might get caught up with road closures and then sit in a traffic jam. And then the usual advice we always give: don't cross low water bridges if it's being overtopped. Drive carefully, and if you can stay at home, stay at home. But if you have to go out, just be very cautious and listen to your local radio station and adhere to warnings as they are being issued.
Mr. Creel, you'll concede that this type of instance or incident is perennial in the province. I mean, winter comes every year, and with it comes bad weather and flooding. I just wonder to myself sometimes whether enough plans or sufficient plans are in place, and if there is enough foresight to prevent the scale of the tragedy that you've just outlined to me. I mean, 4,000 people and 1,000 homes is big, whichever way you look at it.
You're absolutely right, Jeremy, and it's a discussion we are having in government, and it's a very serious discussion. In the province, we're planning for climate change, because we expect these type of events to become more severe and more intense in the future. So the problem is definitely not going to go away. It goes hand in hand with planning. A lot of the times where people are suffering because of these events is because they are living in areas that are not suited for human settlement, and that goes to planning. It goes to bulk infrastructure. So from government side, we have to do long-term planning, like we're doing with water security, where we've got a 15-year plan looking towards the future, because I mean we're struggling with lots of water at the moment, but the long-term picture is that we're going to be struggling to get enough water. So yes,
I accept the argument, but given that it's always poor areas that are impacted, this would suggest that there is poor planning as far as mitigation is concerned by your government.
I would respectfully disagree with you, Jeremy, on that one. I think the province and the city is doing a very good job to plan and to with the budgets that they have available, try to put infrastructure in place that would that aims to prevent this type of tragedy. But obviously, like you said, here we are again. And we're gonna try and address the situation that's in front of us right now, and we will continue to work so that we don't see this in the future again.
Wouter Kriel, thank you very much indeed. He speaks for the Western Cape government. Appreciate your time today. Just before we go, on our last online poll, I referenced the low election turnout. I asked if it was no new ideas, tired of politics, or couldn't find the right party. 43% saying they're tired, and 37% saying the right party wasn't on the ballot paper. Today, you heard me talking about a new nuclear power station in the offing. Do you think it's a good idea? Do you think we should fix what we have at the moment, or is it too expensive? If you have a view on that, you can participate in the poll either on our LinkedIn or on our Twitter pages. That's also our program for today. MoneyWeb at Midday is live at noon weekdays. We're then up as a podcast. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at Midday, or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.